how can I see myself, see my life, see my dog in front of me as the individuals we are, living the life that we are living in our own unique expression? And how can I live it to the most vitally, with the most vigor, with the most joy that I can?
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you're listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today on Dog Words, Stephanie Smith discusses helping humans and animals develop happier and healthier relationships. She is the founder of Sacred Paws and a certified dog behavior consultant, a certified positive reinforcement dog trainer, and a certified professional canine nutritionist. This is part one of two episodes with Stephanie. Next time, we'll explore her fascinating work with wolf hybrids at Wolves of Maine Sanctuary. A link to our interview with Kim Prenti and Chelsea Morey from Wolves of Maine is in the description. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode, we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We Save Each Other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. You can support Rosie Fund by making a donation on our website or Facebook page. You can also contribute by making a purchase from the store on our website, buying a t-shirt at bonfire.com, or buying our note cards featuring Rosie and Peaches and our shirts on barkyours.com. Links are in the description. Your donations and purchases help fund the Rosie Life Starter Kits that make sure these senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have some of the items they'll need in their forever home. Any donation amount is greatly appreciated, but here are some popular levels. $30 provides a collar and leash for a Rosie Life Starter Kit dog, and $100 covers their entire kit. You can also support Rosie Fund by downloading, subscribing, rating, and most importantly, sharing Dog Words. Follow us on social media, even if you aren't looking for a dog. Watching and sharing the videos helps our channel gain exposure, bringing awareness to our cause and giving shelter dogs much-needed attention. Our free Rosie Fund YouTube channel offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, Vinny, and shelter dogs looking for their forever home. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder to adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Joining us from Maine is animal behavior consultant Stephanie Smith. Stephanie, welcome to Dog Words.
Hi, Phil. Thank you so much for having me today. It's a real honor to be here, and I love the work you're doing at Rosie Fund. Thank you for what you do.
Well, what we do with Rosie Fund is we highlight senior and harder to adopt dogs so that they can get into their forever home. The shelter environment often doesn't present senior and harder to adopt dogs in a way that has much curb appeal or makes a good first impression, that people come in looking for, where are your golden retriever puppies, which don't last in a shelter often long enough to even be posted on the website. They're out the door. That's what everyone's looking for. And senior dogs, people want a dog that's going to be with them for years and years. They don't want to feel like they're adopting a veterinary bill. And there's issues with that perception. But for the purposes of our discussion, I want to focus more on the harder to adopt dogs. And there are harder to adopt dogs simply because they have bad PR. That, oh, this is a pit bull mix. That's scary. This is a Rottweiler. You can't control them. They're so big and powerful. And these misconceptions that people have about dogs. But a lot of the harder to adopt dogs that we feature just don't present well in a shelter environment. They are reactive to someone approaching their kennel, or they're reactive because on either side of them is another dog that's reactive. And so there's behavior issues that perhaps can be modified, or just if given time out of that environment and acclimating to their forever home, they wouldn't be the harder to adopt dog. But the challenge is getting people to understand that these are still great dogs and that there are opportunities to blend them into your family if you have the patience and if you work with a professional. And a lot of people need to do that regardless of whether their dog fits into the harder to adopt category, that their dog could have a better relationship with them. And I really haven't gotten to a question yet because I'm trying to think of the right way to frame this. The discussions we've had with professionals like yourself has really helped me to understand that what you and your colleagues do isn't fixing bad dogs. It's fixing relationships that people have with their dogs. So how would you describe what you do?
Great. Well, how would I describe what I do? Well,
because you meet someone, like you sit next to someone on a flight and you say, I'm an accountant, I'm a lawyer, I'm a bricklayer. It's like, okay, I can picture that. And you say, I'm an animal behavior consultant. There's going to be follow-up questions.
Yes, yes. No, there will be. And as easy as a question as it is, it's honestly quite complex. So if I was going to sum it in 10 words or less, I would say, hey, yeah, I'm a certified dog behavior consultant. I'm a certified dog trainer on the positive reinforcement spectrum, as well as a canine nutritionist. And I also work a great deal with herbalism, canine herbalism specifically. You know, that's a lot to lay on someone. So then it's like, well, how can I help someone understand a little bit more about what this means? Well, ultimately, what it means is, how can I see myself, see my life, see my dog in front of me as the individuals we are, living the life that we are living in our own unique expression? And how can I live it to the most vitally, with the most vigor, with the most joy that I can? And it doesn't mean we don't experience quote unquote negative emotions and feel depressed and anger and frustration and things like that. What it does mean is, how can I move through life in a way that supports me to live my best life? And that is mirrored very well in the canine world as well.
The connection that people have with their companion animal, whether it's a dog or a cat or any other creature, a boa constrictor, if the behavior is not fitting what you have idealized as this is what a dog in my house should be like, it's frustrating if you don't understand the behavior. If it's not behaving the way you want to and you don't understand why, then how do you address it? How do you fix it? Do you just put up with it? What kind of education is necessary to help people understand, just like you've described, what you do is complex?
Mm-hmm.
So if someone is motivated to come to you, what sort of reaction do they have when you tell them this isn't just a quick fix? Because I'm a golfer and they want a golf instructor to tell them, move your thumb here on the grip, you'll never slice again. Well, it doesn't work that way. What a good golf instructor will say is, give me 2 or 3 months and we can get you to a place where you can see progress. You won't be better, you won't be fixed, but you'll understand what's wrong, how you can fix it, and then you have to do the hard work to get better. How many pet owners are willing to do that with fixing their relationship with their dog?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I love that analogy with golf. Bless your heart, I don't have enough patience for golf. So in terms of when we look at canine behavior, again, there is strong parallel with human behavior. So in terms of learning new skill sets, I like to use sports analogies. And so I think it's, you know, really easy when we think of, we put a child on a ball field, let's say a soccer field. The first thing they do is they practice with people they know. They practice with friends they know. They practice with a coach, or it's probably a family friend. And so they're learning in environments where their nervous system can be regulated and therefore learning can happen. So one major component, and one component I come back to quite often, is what is going on with the canine's nervous system, because that is going to greatly impact canine behavior. And in terms of your question around, well, how does this sit with clients? Because the client in front of me is human, and obviously I'm working with the dogs. And one thing I say consistently is, dog training or teaching your dog to feel a new emotion, so using behavior remediation, literally 90% of this is human training. And I don't know if I would say exactly 90, maybe it's 95, right? And the dog's kind of just along for the ride because we're their guardians. So in terms of helping people see that behavior is more complex than this cookie cutter, copy paste, suppress the emotion kind of tactic, if you will. Oftentimes I feel people have a bit more relief because their expectations are shifted. So it's like, oh, so this is going to take time. You know, it's like going on a diet or something like that. It's like, oh, so I don't have to quit brownies in a week or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. In my experience, even though, you know, I've definitely had some clients who are frustrated by this, what we're really rubbing up against is the frustration in their own lives and how that is rippling and kind of cascading into the dog's world. It's like, okay, we have a living being here. It takes time. What's their age? What's their history? Do we have any trauma on board? What happened in utero? What happened during pregnancy? What happened in the grandmother's life? A lot of those questions we aren't able to answer. But what we can do is look at the dog in front of us. Keep coming back to who's the dog in front of us, regardless of breed, regardless of some of these other factors. It is, okay, I have a dog whose nervous system is sensitive to the wind. So what can I do? Well, let's start with reinforcing being outside when it's slightly windy, you know? And so we make going on walks is just this big, fun walk, tug, treat fest, right? And then maybe it's a little bit windier the next day. Or maybe the dog is really like, hey, this 10 miles an hour wind, can't do it. So let's do brain games inside. Let's do some physical activity inside the home to support this animal. So there's so many ways that we can support the dog in front of us, support us as humans, which is going to support our relationship as a whole. So when we look at it from that kind of ecosystem standpoint, we really create long-term health and vitality, harmony within the home. We have more joy, more happiness. People are enjoying their time with their dogs. There's just so many other positive domino effect that happens as a result of stepping back, panning out, and seeing the dog in front of us and seeing us for who we are, mm-hmm. you know, what's my nervous system doing? You know, if I'm having a particularly hard day and my pup is having a hard day and he's pulling on leash and he's being cuckoo crazy or whatever you want to say, that overstimulation is going to cause my nervous system overstimulation. So, okay, well, maybe we don't walk today, or maybe we take a couple hours, relax, do something else. We'll walk later in the day. Really looking at it from this panned out whole ecosystem perspective gives people a lot of relief because it puts the ball in their court. And what it does is it helps dissolve those projections. It helps dissolve, well, on TV, I see this person do this and now this dog is calm. Well, there's a lot that we don't see. And there's a lot of things that are mainstream that are highly inappropriate, highly inhumane, and not consistent with canine psychology, how the nervous system works, how we help a dog with trauma, and so on and so forth.
You mentioned you pan out to see the whole picture. I think, and this isn't just with dogs and golf swings, it's with a lot of issues that people approach focusing on one variable instead of looking at, this is a very complicated equation. You can't just isolate the variable of my dog is doing this. What am I doing? Where are we when they're doing it? What else has happened around it? Who else is around? All of those factors and deconstructing it, because your dog doesn't wake up and set an agenda for the day. It's like, how can I annoy my human? I know I will be just the biggest tool on the walk. That's what I'm going to do. And then I won't eat my food. and then I'm going to poop in the kitchen.
Yeah.
They don't have a plan. They're just reacting to what's going on around them. And so identifying, well, what am I feeding them? When am I feeding them? When am I walking them? What's my attitude? Mm-hmm. Am I present? Am I focused? Or am I ignoring them on the walk? Are they just trying to get my attention? And they have learned the only way to do that is to go nuts on the walk and bark at everything and chase everything and pull on the leash. Looking at all those variables is tough, I think, for people. Again, not just with owning a dog, but with other issues, because then there's a locus of control. They have to take some responsibility. This isn't just fixing my dog. It's mm-hmm. understanding and modifying other behaviors within myself.
Absolutely.
And that's tough for people. Because like with golf, I don't drink on the golf course. I know some people, they're on the golf course to have a beer. And my theory is, maybe you like beer, but what you like more is having the built-in excuse for playing poorly. It's like, well, I've had three beers. It's like, I could be a scratch golfer if I didn't drink the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Or constantly talking about how it's windy today, or the course is too firm, or someone on the next hole was talking loudly while I was trying to putt, instead of what can I control? What can mm-hmm. I do for my process, instead of isolating what others are doing?
Mm-hmm.
It's tough for people.
It is hard. In my opinion, anything that's in our lives is our own and is our responsibility. So if I'm particularly struggling with a dog in my home, you know, one of the first questions I ask is like, well, and this doesn't have to necessarily be answered, it can be rhetorical, but it is, well, what is it that's going on in our lives that is showing up in our dogs and we're rubbing up against it and it's uncomfortable? One of my dogs, his name is Ash, and he's a almost 8-year-old Siberian Husky. And there's a thing called breed tendencies. It doesn't necessarily mean that all dogs of one breed are going to be predictably the same. But Ash, he is very much falls in that typical adventurous, vivaciousness for life husky. And I remember when he was younger, I really struggled with being patient. And one of the greatest lessons I learned from him, and he still teaches me something every day. And one thing I realized was how much tension I was holding, how much stress I was holding, how often I was putting myself in situations that were causing me more stress. Also, how often I would be more serious and not have fun and not loosen up and not just enjoy life in front of me. I was often thinking about tomorrow, what to do 6 months from now. And so I was really kind of caught up in those lower states of being and lower frequency states of emotion. So frustration, worry, concern, and that was certainly affecting him as well. And so together we've kind of figured out that, well, we have to have a lot more fun in life. We got to get dirty more. Let's do some running instead of walking because walking's boring. Mm-hmm. Let's have a lot more sniffs instead of, hey, we got to get 3 miles in today and we got to do it in an hour. So it's like, okay, how can I pan out and say, wow, I'm stressed. I'm struggling. He's stressed. He's struggling. Mm-hmm. And how can we work with each other to support one another instead of against each other?
And that takes time, mm-hmm. but it's worth it. If you go to get professional help for anything and someone tells you, we can't do this in one session, whether it's your golf swing or mm-hmm. Mental health or your dog, well, we can't fix this in one session. This is going to take weeks, months, perhaps longer. And you can say, well, if we can't fix it today, forget it and leave. Weeks, months, and longer from now, things are not going to be better. They're probably going to mm-hmm. be worse. So why not invest your time for those weeks and months so that the payoff, the return on investment is my dog is less stressed, my dog is happier, the quality of life for my dog is improved, and I'm preserving my own sanity. my own mental health, my own emotional well-being. So yeah, you can not do anything because it takes longer than one session, or you can invest the time to enjoy golf more instead of being frustrated by your slice a year from now because you didn't do anything about it this season. It's like, well, I'm going to play with the swing I have this season. I don't have time to fix it. It's like, well, maybe this is the season you get better and you're going to enjoy golf more next season. Like, well, maybe these are the months that you spend focusing on improving your relationship with your pet so that everyone in the household is enjoying their company more.
Absolutely. And the payout is tenfold. I mean, think of any arduous, challenging, heartbreaking situation you've ever had to dig through and out of, pick yourself up every day, get yourself out of bed every day. When you're consistently choosing, I'm going to be better today. I'm going to make better choices. I'm going to advocate for myself. I'm going to practice body autonomy. I'm going to X, Y, Z. It compounds, just like we can have the reverse compounding effect. So I like to talk about inputs a lot. So I discuss with my clients constantly about how can we input more good and how can we mitigate what is a negative factor in this dog's life and in this individual's life. So being consistent is one of the key factors of behavior change. Patience, another one. And then frequency of practice. You know, if we practice something once a year, like in your golf scenario, then that will not shift behavior. You know, so that's true for humans as well as dogs. So in terms of our canines, it's like, where can we start? All right, so let's start with, I know when we walk by a particular home and there's this dog barking, my dog freezes or my dog starts barking or my dog is stressed. So what can we do to change that? Well, we can start with, maybe we have a cue that is where you speed up past a location. So I like to call it like an emergency U-turn, or I call it a bail cue sometimes. So we say this fun word and then we just run and the dog loves it. And so it's like, oh, forget about this scary house, whether it's the dog or the Halloween decorations that are out or whatever the case may be. Can we make going by this house more fun? And now not only is it more fun for our dog, it's more fun for us. Now our walks are becoming more enjoyable. Or maybe it's once we get to this home, our dog is really struggling. So maybe can we go on a different walk? We think we're very linear as humans. We, you know, linear in expectations, and behavior doesn't work linearly. We're linear when we think of walks. We're like, I'm going to walk from A to B. Well, how about every time we approach a walk, we just think of it as a what is those courses, like competition courses where you have to jump over things and
like parkour or cross country or
like
steeplechase.
Yeah. Anything like that. So it's like, okay, so let's hide behind this car and play sit and down. And then, all right, we're going to walk this way and then we're going to walk the other way. And then we're going to walk across the street. So how can we make it like a maze and make this adventure fun instead of stressful to the dog, stressful to the human, stressful for life? There's other things I would interject for that scenario, but that's just one way to go about it.
Yeah, you talk about inputs, and that gets people thinking about, oh, what do I have to do as part of my process to get a different outcome? I'm creating these inputs now. Perhaps they need a reminder. You already have inputs. You're already doing this, but you're choosing the wrong ones or defaulting to the ones that produce an outcome you don't like. But if you were more mindful, more present, more conscious of the choices you're making, what are the inputs instead of just letting them happen? Or like you said, falling into a pattern that this is the way we do things. But why is this the way we do things? Why do we have this route? This is not a prescribed route that we have to walk.
Yes.
You can choose. We had a dog, Peaches, that regular listeners are familiar with Peaches. She was very independent, self-reliant, did not require or enjoy a lot of direction or guidance. And so for walks, especially where we used to live, where there are lots of options, different directions we could go, I would just let her choose. Mm-hmm. And I only vetoed either as a matter of safety or as a matter of, we do have a time constraint. If we go down this route, we won't get back on the schedule that we have to. But otherwise, if the afternoon was free and she wanted to do a 2-hour walk instead of a 30-minute walk, just let her go.
Mm-hmm.
Our most recent dog who passed in September, Vinny, he needed guidance. If you just let him go on his own, trouble would be found. Mm-hmm. So understanding that dogs are unique and not just transferring your relationship with one dog to the next. People come into a shelter or perhaps go to a breeder and say, I want another Peaches or I want another Vinny, instead of looking for what's a relationship, what's a dog that needs me, a dog that I need. It might be different. It would be awkward, and even just describing this is going to seem awkward, if your spouse passes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I want to find someone just like her. Well, that's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being open to what is life going to bring, what relationships grow, what resonates with me, it might be an entirely different partner, whether that's a human partner or a dog partner. And just being open and agreeable to what the universe is presenting you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear about Vinny. Condolences for your loss. He sounds wonderful.
He was.
And yeah, I think that's a really great parallel, even though it is uncomfortable. Because when we really, again, pan out, because for a lot of us humans, we've done things for a certain period of time, and it's just part of our subconscious programming. So we don't question, why do I do these things? Why do I get upset in this situation? Why?
Yeah. For someone to come to you and say, my dog is doing this. My last dog didn't behave this way. Mm-hmm. If you went to a marriage counselor, the session would not go well if you said, well, my last wife.
Yeah. No, that would not go well at all.
That's not going to sit well with your current wife.
Yeah.
So, putting the template of your previous dog on your current dog, well, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I have certainly met with many people who rub up against that attachment to their previous dog. And I completely empathize with that. I definitely understand where they're coming from. And it's hard. It's, you know, losing a dog has been my hardest experience, to say the least. So I can fully empathize with that. However, when we're ready, at some point we have to start asking, okay, there's this dog in front of me. I love this dog. I want to provide for this dog. I want to give this dog a good life. I have to keep coming back to, what does this dog need in this now moment? What do I need in this now moment? And seeing the dog as, again, as an individual, and that's where the medicine is. That's where the harmony comes. That's where joy and peace come, when we come into that space and really see with clear eyes what is in front of us and what to do next in terms of supporting ourselves and our canines.
Animal behavior is clearly a topic about which you have a great deal of knowledge, but it's also apparent that you have a passion for this. How did you become an animal behavior consultant?
Yeah, I started with humans. So a large part of my background is working with humans and helping them to understand themselves, to want the best for their lives, to follow what brings them true joy. And so through my own evolution of being a public school educator for 10 years, I was an adjunct professor for 4, became a health coach and energy worker, worked with herbs to support human clients. And a great deal of that came from the trauma lens, the lenses of polyvagal theory, attachment theory, and other ways of human psychology. So in a way, supporting people to discover themselves, which is the path to, again, vitality, health, and harmony, in my opinion, mirrors in the canine world. And I've been in the canine world for a while, and just in my, you know, behind the scenes with my own canine. So I've studied canine nutrition for almost 10 years, canine behavior, certainly from certain lenses, but the canine behavior component is fairly new in comparison to how long I've been working with humans. And the more I look back and see all the work that I've done in support of human evolution and humans living their best lives, when I started coming into the canine world, I was really blown away how much it overlaps and how much there is this interweaving of worlds that can either be negatively impacted or positively impacted depending on our approach. So using tools that support our canines' behavior, emotion, and physicality are really important. Using canine body language to understand what our canines are going through instead of projecting, oh, my dog is feeling this way. Okay, so, well, how do you know that? What signs are my dog exhibiting that show me that my dog is feeling XYZ? And there are other components that I would add into that to create this kind of tapestry in greater understanding and greater knowing of how to support ourselves, our dogs, and the trajectory of our lives together.
In the description for this episode, I have a link for your website, oursacredpaws.com, and for your social media. If someone wants one-on-one help, individual help, if they're in Maine, they have pretty good access to you. Mm-hmm. But also, the webinars seem like a great way for someone to get sort of that baseline knowledge of what is possible with my relationship with my companion dog. What kind of webinars do you have?
Great. So I also offer one-on-one Zoom consultations and do active training and behavior remediation through Zoom in case somebody ever wanted to reach out for support when they're not close in proximity to Maine. So that is also an option for them. But I offer all kinds of webinars. I am building a webinar library and am going to be offering many of these free on YouTube, just not quite there yet in terms of having that availability. But yeah, I'll do quite a bit of webinars around understanding our canines, how to assess what is going on in terms of, oh, we saw a lip lick. Oh, our dog's head turned away from us. What do these things mean? So understanding canine body language is fundamental. Understanding canine etiquette, you know, so in terms of when I greet a human, I usually look them in the eye and shake their hands. Mm-hmm. That couldn't be more rude in the canine world. So canine etiquette webinars, understanding the nervous system. The nervous system is so critical. A lot of times I will get clients who say, my dog is not listening and I want my dog to listen. Well, a lot of times that has to do with the nervous system, and not always, you know, we could have a dog who just doesn't want to listen and is just like, I got a better agenda in mind. So we got to figure that out. Discussing, oh, what does it mean when our dog is in fight or flight? How do we prevent rehearsal of that? Because we don't want our dogs to get stronger at feeling uncomfortable, stronger at feeling fearful. We want our dogs to feel good. We want to put good inputs. We want stress reductive inputs. So webinars on that information as well. Stress, how to identify stress in your dog's life. Those are other really major pieces that help unlock a lot of these seemingly outlier behaviors, or, oh, my dog barks only when this happens, or my dog's lunging and pulling only when this happens. So how can we string this together and make sense of it? And then how can we better support our canines? So I will always announce webinars on my website. I also will announce that on Facebook and Instagram, so people can find me through those mediums and they can stay abreast with what is coming out for information that they might be interested in learning.
And again, those are linked in the description. Obviously, it's a great resource for individual dog owners, but something that a family could watch to educate your children on, really, it's dog safety, to understand how to communicate with dogs. They're going to be safer around your dogs, other people's dogs. And dogs, this is not a newsflash, are super smart. And your family dog may have figured out you and figured out your kids. And so that relationship works, but it may not work with dogs in general, because your dog is so friendly and accommodating and trusts you and trusts your children that they think, this is how I can treat all dogs. Well, maybe not. Right. And so educating with these webinars for your family, or I think this would be a great resource for rescue groups as a whole to watch, but certainly when they get new volunteers to say, let's make sure you have a baseline understanding of dog behavior, human-animal interaction, instead of having to create your own training sessions. Don't reinvent the wheel. Right. Stephanie already has wheels for you to access online. Use Stephanie's wheels. Don't reinvent your own. So yeah, this is a great resource. I encourage people to check out your website, follow you on social media, and just following you on social media, they're going to get great insights and tips that will improve their relationship with their dog and other dogs. Stephanie Smith, again, the website is oursacredpaws.com. One more golf analogy. Maybe I'll go in and rename the podcast Golf Words instead of Dog Words, or Golf and Dog Words. I'm not a bad golfer. And whenever I'm playing with someone who isn't as skilled and they see me hit a good shot, and they go, oh, that was a good shot, or I can't pull that off, or I wish I had that shot in my bag, I will point out, I take lessons. More often than not, the response I get, people will say, oh, I took a lesson once, or I did a community ed thing for a couple sessions, but not seriously taking lessons. But the most common response is, I'm not good enough for lessons. When I kind of get my game figured out, get my game in shape, yeah, I might take lessons to get to the next level. Well, that's backwards. What they're saying is, I'm going to ingrain these bad habits so it will take longer and more money for someone to fix this. Instead of, why don't we get off on the right foot so you don't have to unlearn everything? Don't wait till you get your dog figured out. Don't wait till you think you've mastered it or you've identified the problem. Don't go to Stephanie and say, here's what's wrong. How do I fix that? Let Stephanie help you identify, or whatever professional you go to, let them tell you what the fix is, because odds are you're probably wrong. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I would just let your listeners know that it's okay to feel frustrated and feel like you don't know what you're doing, or feel lost because one of your dogs was one way and this new dog is a different way. And that's just a really great time to reach out to trusted, known, well-informed professionals, and even just sit down for an hour conversation and unpack what it is you're experiencing, unpack what it is that you're seeing, and then take it one step at a time and find joy in what you're doing, in terms of, this doesn't have to be mechanical. It doesn't have to be, you must do this thing. It is, okay, well, what do we love to do? How can we support ourselves? And take it from there.
Stephanie, thank you for providing a valuable service to dog owners, dog lovers, and for making it available online so that anyone can access this. And of course, thank you for being on Dog Words.
Thank you so much, Phil. This has been a wonderful conversation.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you to Stephanie Smith of Sacred Paws for joining us today. Links to oursacredpause.com and all of its social media are in the description. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission. Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Go to rosyfun.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions via the contact form at rosyfund.org and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening to Dog Words, and remember, we save each other.